Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Board Game Triangle. You might have noticed if you're following us in order, but we're a little bit late on this, so we definitely appreciate you guys hanging in there. We took a little spring break.
We're alive!
Yep.
and still here. And who is we? So I am Sarah, one of your hosts, and I'm joined here by my friend Ken.
Hey guys, this is Ken.
And Tim.
Hey. She said you're a friend. Hello. Hello.
Sarah and I have gone into the definition of friend in great detail over a year
this
ago and determined both what it requires to be a friend and that we are in fact friends. So
there are levels.
Mostly because I have very strict rules and policies.
There's a friend tier, okay?
Oh, yes. No.
It's definitely a layered system, okay? So to be Ken's friend, you gotta know your layers. Okay, so it's been a minute. Let's just kind of do a little life update recap, because it's been a couple weeks since we've recorded. So, Ken, what you been up to?
A lot of stuff. I've been part of a bunch of different Facebook social groups and doing things, actually putting together another board gaming group. So I've got a chat going with, I think we're up to like 60 people in the chat trying to figure out when and where to be able to do different games. So yeah, I think tomorrow night I'm probably going to be getting together with maybe about 15 to 20 of them to go do something over at Gamers Geekery, and had several different groups of people from that group over to my house for some board games over the past month or two. So lots of new board games, lots of people being taught games, and trying to help find people who haven't played games in years and looking to have a new friend of people to play Firefly with, or to find somebody who has what was that one we
Kingdom
had
Death Monster.
Kingdom Death Monster. One of the people in the group has that and was asking if anyone wanted to play, so I might actually get to play Kingdom Death Monster, the game we talked about when we were doing
BGG
100. So basically, I have better friends now, and probably
don't need this
podcast anymore.
That's what I'm detecting. That's what I'm getting a whiff of the air of.
Tim, what if we talk about doing mouth noises? Don't do mouth noises.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
We specifically said that mouth noises on a podcast cost us listeners. And Tim's like, oh, another way for me to drive away listeners?
Yeah.
Okay, I
need a very long list of ways I can drive them away, just for backup measures.
So Ken's life update, he found better friends. Tim, what's been going on in your world?
Oh, man. International travel, which is a lot of fun. I do it for work, but it's also very exhausting, especially since I'm basically flying halfway across the world. And you basically just barely get adjusted to the time zone, and then you fly back, which actually flying there is way, way, way worse than flying back. But yeah, I had a great time. We were up in the Slovakian mountains, which was very cool.
Did you actually get to see or do anything local or just work stuff?
For the most part, it was a relaxing vacation. I originally was planning to ski, but I just ended up not doing it while we were there. Just too much other stuff going on. And really, I mean, the whole point of it is just to, since we're a fully remote company, we get together twice a year, and it's just kind of a way for us to kind of build camaraderie and spend time together. So I focused mostly on that, brought some board games. I can officially say that two more people have bought Railroad Inc. because of it. So I'm telling you, man, this game sells itself. It's incredible. So
it is such a good game, and it's so related to our topic today. So we're going to be talking about expansions and expansion content. But before we jump in with our warm-up question, I will just give, like, my life updates are not international traveler finding a whole new group of friends. So I started rowing.
Multiple new groups of friends.
Yeah.
I'll have you know.
That's
one new group of friends.
I'm interpreting this as I'm slipping, man. Like, I apparently need to invite you guys to more board gaming activities. You guys.
to be fair.
I mean, you travel internationally. We have to find something else to do with our lives, Tim.
Apparently so.
I did actually have a sushi and board game night with some people, with some friends last night, which is why I'm kind of out of it today, because we stayed up really late playing Return to Dark Tower. So that was a
lot. That's awesome. Did you play with people who had played board games before, or?
No, actually we had, so it was a couple of friends that I know from work, and then Morgan's friend Joe that you guys met playing TI. Yeah, yeah. And so we had five people, and it's a 4-player game. So Morgan got to be the game master and like manage the tablet. So he taught all three of them how to play. And every time I chimed in with stuff, he was like, "You're not the game master." So it was cute. It was really cute.
I would have loved to have joined if it wasn't for me wanting to get green grass to grow in my shitty yard. I swear, like, that backyard is atrocious, and this was like perfect weather, and I was like, I hate it. I hate spending my relaxed day to just basically scrape a bunch of dead grass everywhere and plant new grass.
Oh yeah, grass is painful. You know the trick to having nice green grass? Have fescue when it's not 70 degrees outside yet. My grass is so green, and like there's no reason for it.
That's what I'm trying to grow right now. That's what I'm trying to grow. But it's been a challenge because apparently when they laid the sod, this is the worst sod ever. It is like it grew really quick, so this way the soil didn't erode. But now it's just this super trash like grass, and I'm trying to replace it with fescue.
Bermuda?
Yeah, it's Bermuda.
We have some patches in our yard that are Bermuda, and just okay. This is not a grass podcast. Let's move on. I could talk about grass for an embarrassing amount of time. So we'll start off.
It's a deep subject, actually. As I've learned. There's people who go crazy for lawns, and they like lay out sand and perfectly level it. And like you could spend your a significant amount of time on just lawn care.
I'm sure there's a lawn care podcast out there. Like it's like a rule 34 of podcasts. Like if you can think of it, there's a podcast of it.
Allow me to brush my hand through your smooth fescue. Yeah.
Okay. I knew it was bad to bring that up. Okay. So I did want to bring up one recent game that we've played. That was another run through of Unsettled. So anybody want to talk about what happened with that?
Yeah, it turns out the planet will, in fact, remain unsettled. That's certainly true.
We all died.
Yes, a terrible death. I
forgot. It wasn't even close.
What type of planet was it? It was like a planet with a bunch of storms and stuff on it.
Yeah. Storms would go low and high, and if you got caught in a storm, you'd get hurt. And you had different tiles that required you to be low or high in order to get things done. So, you know, spend an entire round at one point getting myself to the right height and getting myself over to where I need to be. And then we got a surprise change in the storm that knocked me down. And I was like, I was really upset because I'd wasted an entire round of stuff trying to get myself into that position. So I was going to have to waste another entire round to get back to the same position just to be able to try to do the thing I was wanting to do. Yeah, we had a lot of those kind of things happen.
And this scenario was like kind of it went full Scooby-Doo and Let's Split Up Gang kind of a thing. And that was kind of a fun aspect to it. It was like, I forgot who paired up, but I think it was Ken and Sarah paired up.
Yep.
And then, Jeff and Alicia and I were kind of paired up working together.
Yeah.
But, it was a really cool scenario. I think what this basically led to was, once you get past the basic scenario, you're probably going to have to play through them a couple times to try and figure out like the optimal way to basically get through the scenario. So
I think we made a lot of, like, I think the split was really good. I think that a lot of what we're trying to do objectively wise was good. I think one of the things we realized as we were going through it is that we should have done a lot more of exploration of things than we had done instead of trying and building up some more powers, because then by the time we hit things at the end, we didn't have some of the capabilities we needed. So yeah, it was definitely going to find that balance required basically losing once in order to understand what we were doing wrong.
We definitely learned who out of our little group was okay with losing a co-op game and who was like, what did we just do for 3 hours?
Yeah, I mean, I never mind losing co-op games. Definitely something that I think that challenging co-op games, you're going to lose. Like, at some point,
yeah,
you're not going to win them all.
This was one where, like, once you figure out, okay, yeah, there's no way that we can win this, it's hard to play it out. We've had it come close, and we played it out, and it was like, okay, play it out. If this could happen, mm-hmm. we pretty much knew we were not going to win.
Yeah, I think that's actually worse than losing, if that makes any sense.
Right.
Like, obviously, you know, like, I'm okay with, like, fighting to the end, but it's one thing if it's, like, it's close, and we should just play it out, and then it's another if it's, like, very clear that unless the stars align, there's no chance yep. that you're going to pull out the win.
Yeah. You would have to get a
lot of games where there's a long tail between the point when it's obvious who's going to win, who's going to lose, what's going to happen, and the game actually ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in, you know, games like chess or, you know, StarCraft, when you realize that, you resign and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Often in board gaming culture, people aren't happy with the, oh, it's obvious this person's going to win. Let's just all acknowledge their win and stop playing.
Do you think that's a good thing to have more of? Do you think that's easier or harder with a co-op game?
I mean, with a co-op game, I feel like it. If we obviously know we've lost it, it should be a lot more comfortable to say, okay, let's start over. But often, again, I feel like in board gaming in general, our culture doesn't have a comfort with saying, okay, it's obvious what the outcome is. Let's stop. People want to finish, and
right. Well,
even
it's
if
tricky.
It's miserable, even if it's not fun, they want to finish.
Right, sure. I think it's tricky because in Unsettled, mm-hmm. It's hard because on the one hand, it's not like we're super experienced with the game yet, so it's not like we know all the curveballs that could show up that maybe could make it more or less feasible to win. On top of that, you don't know what the next objective is, so it could be something very simple that you could accomplish, and in general, they do kind of get, quote, simpler as you go,
yeah.
at least so far in experience. So it's like, sure, maybe, you know, completing step one took 75% of the time, but you can complete the other two parts in less than 25% of the time.
And that was part of what we wanted to do in our game was to be able to see what the next objective was. It turned out that had we stayed split, had we kept half the group on the other side of the map, we actually possibly could have actually even won at that point, because the last objective would have been easy if we had done a completely different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
By the time we'd gotten to that point, we'd already collected the whole group together and gone to do the second to last objective together. At that point, we were done. We weren't going to be able to complete the last one and finish mm-hmm. the game.
So basically, the playing that out was just gathering information on what could happen for the next time we play it.
Yeah, which I think is a valid strategy.
Yeah, totally.
Which is what Tim and I were wanting to do and enjoying doing with it. I think once Sarah realized that we were not going to win today, she stopped having engagement with the game, kind of what I might put it from. I don't want to put words in your mouth. That kind of seemed like, well, once you realized we were not going to win this round, you seem like you started having much less fun.
Which there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
So, on the one hand, Sarah, would you have been okay with just calling it and then just looking at the cards just to see what we would have encountered rather than like, I think Ken and I think we feel that you have to earn that, right? You have to at least get that far before you're allowed to see what it is. Would you have wanted to, like, call it and then see, or just call it all together and then just start fresh?
All right, hold on. Let me just defend myself here.
Absolutely.
At no point
did I stop playing.
No.
Or play worse.
No.
No.
Or ask
to
stop.
No.
So, fuck you guys. I didn't.
I'm just saying you seemed like you were having much less fun once it became obvious we were not going to be able to win.
I have to agree with Ken there. Like, I'm not saying, you didn't look like you were quitting. I think you were just like, if we had suggested, hey, should we keep going? You would have been like, nah.
I mean, to be fair, that could be said for, like, most of the activities that I do day to day. If someone told me I could just stop doing them, I would.
Fair. Okay, fair.
Let's be real. That's just how I live my life.
It's
just this Protestant, like, desire to keep pushing through things. But if someone told me it was okay, I would not.
You could just stop. We don't have to finish this podcast, Sarah. I hope that could have been bad.
Oh, God. It's over.
After I did just say I was dead from staying up late last night. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I won't belabor that point of, like, Sarah, like, you wanted to quit.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Like, you were clearly still enjoying yourself overall. But yeah. One other point I wanted to bring up really quick before we change subjects was, it's also tricky because in games like Spirit Island, it's much harder to see whether you're going to win or not. And also that the low lows are like really low before you really get to start clawing back and get strong. So in games like that, it's a lot harder to see like, yeah, we're not going to win because there's so many things that could happen between now and the end.
So if at a low low you decide to let's just quit and start over, you know, in Spirit Island, that would be a mistake because no, you actually still are in it, even though you feel like no, we have destroyed this. It is not going to work. We have messed up.
There are games where I felt that were unwinnable and we've come back from it.
Yeah. I will say just one more point in my defense. When we got to the end and we were all exhausted, which is how you lose the game.
Yep.
Jeff and I, who were probably the most disengaged, were like, let's play one more round to see what happens.
That's true. That's true. All right.
All right. So let's move on to our warm-up question that will hopefully be less contentious than that discussion of a game that happened two weeks ago.
Hey, this is what people signed up for. You know, people signed up for like the heated debates, and it's just up until now, we pretty much agree on everything. But now we're bringing the hammer. Disagreement everywhere.
Yeah.
This is why they listened through 13 prior episodes of pure agreement.
Surely they'll fight at some point.
We're done being nice. We're calling Sarah out on kind of seeming bored.
It's all we've got, okay?
Look, I was just sad that the buffalo chicken mac and cheese was gone.
Oh, dude. That's
slamming. They didn't have it at Costco really the last time I went. I was so sad.
Costco. after our heart, man. Just don't look at the calorie count.
No, don't even. Okay, so our warm-up question, and this is not at all inspired by the fact that I'm trying to buy a rowing machine on Facebook Marketplace right now. What do you think a used game on the secondhand market should be worth? Like, is it 50% of what it sells for new? Is it more? Is it less? What are your thoughts?
Man, there's a lot of fluctuation on that, especially I think the thing that affects it the most is probably whether it's in print right now.
Right. But again, because there are games that are available new and you could just go buy a new copy, and that is much different from a game that hasn't been in print for 10 years if you want to play it. So I would say games that are no longer available, it can easily be double or I see games for triple. I would personally have a hard time playing triple, you know, face value for a game.
Looking at you, Battlestar Galactica.
Yep. But, you know, I could definitely see playing maybe as much as twice as face value for a game that hasn't been available for a while. For a game that's currently available, used versus new, I'm probably feeling, you know, yeah, like on that 50% kind of level there. I don't really like paying if it's maybe between 50 and 75%, I might be willing to. But more than 75% of market value for something I can just get new, I'm going to buy the new one.
Yeah, me too. Like, especially since when you really look at shipping costs, I've also, based on some game purchases that my dad has done, it's kind of a toss-up as to how well this person's going to pack it. So who knows if it, like, even if it was in good condition, it might get a little bit roughed up on the way there. It's hard to say also because I haven't really bought a lot of used games. It's fairly difficult to kind of coordinate the whole thing. And honestly, I'd rather just go to the game store or, you know, Amazon.
Okay.
I did recently buy a copy of Star Wars Rebellion from a friend, game. And, you know, buying that one from a friend, I did increase my offer price, on the condition that he play it with me twice, because Star Wars Rebellion, I wanted to get a playthrough both as the Empire and as the Rebels with somebody who knew how to play the game, so that I would then know the game really well and have gotten at least two playthroughs for this huge box that's now sitting on my shelf. So
that's awesome.
That was one where I increased my offer price based on the requirement that you had to play it with me twice.
If it's a fresh Kickstarter, oftentimes the answer is probably like 1.2 to 1.5 times the original cost of the game. So yep.
Very specific.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's very common. I just noticed this exact thing with I just got the Heroes board game delivered this Saturday. And, you know, there's always the people who, like, they order it, they immediately play it as soon as it arrives, and then they're like, I don't like it. And then they immediately try to sell it for more because it's hard to get at the moment. Mm-hmm. So that's honestly very common.
Would there be a price point at which you would sell your copy? Just, you know, figure a big enough of a profit turn, you just, you know, flip it and get rid of it.
Everybody's got a number.
His copy.
Ken, nostalgia is priceless. Okay. Maybe, but only because in this case, I'm pretty positive that they're going to have all of it available at retail, but it would be a lot. It would have to be a lot. Cause I don't know if they are actually making like the collector's big box ever again. So it might actually be worth way more if you just hold on to it.
It was a spectacularly large box.
Wasn't it?
That box is huge.
Man, I'm so ready to play it with you guys. Now, so here's the challenge with that game.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is I'm not sure how exciting it will be if you haven't played the original video game. Like, I think it's a good board game on its own, but I don't think it's something that, like, someone would be as excited to play unless you had like the nostalgia factor.
Because so I'm hearing we all need to go back and play the video game.
Oh yeah, no,
and then we can play a board game with you. Is that
honestly, if you are a fan of like the old school like Civilization like games or like the Sid Meier's games, this game would absolutely suck you in, and you would have a hard time putting it down. It single handedly has the most video game hours of all time in my life. I'm quite positive. So I was really excited when they announced the board game, and it's still the video game itself.
Anybody who puts 100 hours into the video game can come play with Kim.
Anybody who starts the game will easily put 100 hours into it, and then they're allowed to play the board game as well. But yeah, it's still huge in Europe and Russia. It's one of the most popular games. It kind of doesn't for some reason have a following here in the US. It's kind of strange. Like, it did at the time, but I have a hard time talking to people here who still play it. Whereas, like, when I talk to like my coworkers who were in Europe, a lot of them knew what the game was. So it's kind of just a weird dynamic.
Is it like Super Smash Brothers? I feel like that's an old game that gets a lot of play for no reason.
Well, Super Smash Brothers still has new games come out. So
true. Okay.
It's pretty common for games to get marked up a lot. I think people also have a hard time selling things for less than what they bought them for.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Here's a specific use case for this question. Okay. So how much is Frosthaven new right now? Like $300?
Holy shit. How much is it? I don't know. Hold on. I'm going to find out. All right. Let's see here. Retail price.
We extensively research each episode before we record.
And I looks added like that keyboard bucks. Typing effect so that it would sound like he's typing on a real keyboard right now.
Okay. So if it's $200 new and you find a person who's selling it used, but they've already undone, undone all the cardboard pieces. So that part is done. You can't.
Which honestly is not nothing now.
I know, right?
My fair share of them. I'm pretty over it at this point.
But other than that, the only thing that's been used in the game and it's otherwise very new is that they put one sticker on the board. How much would you pay for that game?
Sarah, you son of a bitch.
This specifically happened. We were trying to buy it.
And again, like I would have a hard time, you know, paying more than 75% of the new value myself. I would probably at half the new value, I would probably step up if I wanted the game.
Yeah. We offered half and they were like, no.
Yep.
Okay.
Half would be a yes for me. More than half, between half and 75% would depend on how.
Are we including shipping costs?
It was in the area. We were just going to go pick it up.
Oh, I would pay half. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But they said no to half. So how much?
Yeah.
And I was like,
how
are we?
Would you go to?
I was like, well, are we really just being asshole lowballers or what?
No, that's reasonable. I think
that's too much. That's too much. Like, if it's local, so you're not paying shipping, and also like, so remember, the percent is a much bigger deal in this case because it's a very expensive game.
Yep.
So I would say that 50% is too much. I think in this case, 75% is maybe more reasonable.
Okay, so we were being asshole lowballers.
I don't think asshole, but you know, I would say more than 50%.
Entirely reasonable. It's an entirely reasonable first offer. I might have been one to go as high as 75, but I think you're totally fine offering 50.
Okay. See, I might offer a deal to like my friends and stuff and give them a good price because they're my friends.
Yeah.
But for a stranger, absolutely not. 50%? No way. Not happening.
Also,
not for a $200 game. No.
This is also a person who is selling their partner who didn't have Facebook Marketplace, their partner's copy, and they apparently
they're selling their partner. They're like,
it wasn't,
everything must go.
It wasn't their game. It was their partner's game, and they were the ones selling it. So they were relaying the information between us and the person who was actually selling it.
Oh, that's
it.
Even worse.
It was relay. It was very bad. Anyways, okay, so our episode content for this, now that we've gotten through this, how long are we? 25 minutes? Okay, 25 minute intro. We're going to be talking about expansion content. So when we talk about expansions, what's like a generic description of what we're talking about?
I'd say it is add-on content that you typically buy separately, although sometimes you can have expansions that come with the original box, but typically they're add-on content. They're not part of the core game or expected to be part or played as part of the game if you just buy it and follow the basic rule set. Mm-hmm. So I think I would say sometimes you can have things that are, you know, included expansions, but
generally, yeah, I mean, like collector's editions or final edition, like once they've made all the content for the game they're ever going to make, they release it as like a bundled thing. Mm-hmm. Does happen, but for the most part, yeah, they're just add-ons that get released over time.
Why would a game have an expansion?
Because the game is so great and you want more of it. More. Because more is always better, right?
It's like why we have 48,000 Marvel movies.
More because the original game didn't fully work the way that it originally was released, and it needs some modifications or changes. So that would be another possible reason why they end up doing expansion, is kind of to fix things that were broken.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, it's not uncommon. Like, especially, you have to remember that in general, even if you have the same group of people playtest a game 1,000 times, it's very different than, you know, 100,000 people playing it even 10 times each or 2 times each even.
Yeah.
It's just a very different experience. So you'll find things that, you know, that group of, you know, 1,000 people, and usually it's way less than that, maybe 100 people as their playtest group.
As a side note, for playtesting, do you think that they get mostly people who are super familiar with board games? So yes. The playtesters are not going to be your general person who's playing this game?
I think the kind of person who's going to be willing to playtest a game where the rules are not necessarily well-defined and well-balanced are definitely going to tend to be harder core players. I imagine trying to get a casual gamer to play anything, even if it's your spouse or your you know, close friend. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get many casual gamers to come and test out the game you're trying to do, in my mind.
And you can easily see how this commonly is a detriment to the game. One example is actually with the Heroes board game that I just got, to where a lot of people who got the game, they knew the video game, and the board game tried to very closely honor the video game. So there's a lot of mechanics that are similar, or it's much easier to pick up the game if you've played the video game. And the problem is, you have these people who kind of already understand the gist of the game, or, you know, they're just board gamers in general, and so they can pick up mechanics very quickly. So the rule book can end up with tons of glaring holes in it because there's just these assumptions that you make about how the game works, and it's really easy to skip over really simple things. Or also what happens in these playtest groups is, because you have someone who made the game, he's explaining the game to you, or whatever, and then you can easily skip explaining those things in a more general sense in a rule book or something like that. So
yeah, that makes sense.
These kinds of things can happen a lot. So
okay, so sorry, that was a sidebar because I was just curious about playtesting. So we've got two different pathways, right? So we've got add-on content because the game is so amazing that people just want more and more, and of course the people who are making the board game are going to want to cash in on that. Then
which is probably 90 to 95% of the reason why you'd make it.
Then there's the other way of making an expansion, because you have to fix something in the game. Maybe it wasn't playtested well. Like, in general, though, how necessary is an expansion? Like, is there ever a time that you wouldn't want an expansion? Or
who wouldn't want an expansion? You know, it's for your favorite game, along with your other 100 favorite games that you have.
And, I was going to say, the guy that has no room on his board game shelves, of course, wants the expansions.
You know, I think, I mean, people often can have very mixed feelings about expansions, even for games that they love. And I know the Shepard Sit Down review of the Prophecy of Kings expansion for Twilight Imperium is not super glowing. I think they largely came up with the idea that, yeah, if you're, you know, really like Twilight Imperium and you really know what you're getting to with Prophecy of Kings, maybe you'll enjoy it and have fun. But they, you know, like, yeah, for them, it made the game too complex and too much and too many things to keep track of, and they didn't like it. And that can often be the case with expansions for a lot of games. You know, like for myself, King of Tokyo is a game that I enjoy playing the expansions. If I'm playing with people who know King of Tokyo and play it a lot, I typically like to pull King of Tokyo out for a table of people who aren't really into board games and just want to follow a fairly simple rule set with Yahtzee dice. And, you know, for them, just explaining even like the power-up cards is a lot to explain.
Yeah,
explaining
sure.
Two or three different expansions becomes way too much. So I tend to prefer not to do that. Railroad Inc., which we mentioned before, I never use the optional expansion, quote-unquote, dice on that for, you know, whether it's lakes or lava flows or asteroids, because I just like the beauty of drawing out my road set and my trains, and having things that are going to come in and smash them up with asteroids is not fun for me.
Oh my gosh, they've had the desert one going on the app lately, and it like has this option where if you roll a sun, it like kills all of your desert cacti, and God,
it
gets very much more complicated when you add in the expansions. And like, I think if you're bored with the regular one because you've played it a bunch, it's nice. But yeah, I'm with Ken. Why mess with perfection?
Yeah, there's a lot of games where like they brilliantly executed a very like elegant, narrow rule set and really made it shine. And sometimes you just don't want to get in the way of that. Railroad Inc. and King of Tokyo are really great examples. Another one for me is Dice Forge.
Yep.
I feel like I own the expansion to Dice Forge, and I can't even really think of any time that I'm really aching to pull out the expansion when the base game is already so elegant and it's already scooping people in. And when I think of games that I want to have an expanded mechanic set, I'm not looking to take a simple game and make it slightly less simple. You know,
yeah.
That's not to diminish simple games. Like they're great in their own way and they should stay that way. I don't think that they really need more content. That's not to say that the Dice Forge expansion is not good for somebody else who maybe likes simple games only, and then they just want a little bit more to it.
Yeah,
like, and I again, a lot of people I've been playing games with recently, they really love King of Tokyo. They have all the expansions. You know, I am fine playing with the expansions. I do enjoy them. They're not bad. They don't make the game worse. Mm-hmm. They just make it a heavier game. And typically, if I wanted to play a heavier game, there's other games I would point to instead.
Mm-hmm.
But I can enjoy King of Tokyo with the expansions if I'm playing with people who play it a lot and have fun with it and enjoy doing that. That's fine. It's just not how I normally. It's not the use case I normally use the King of Tokyo box on my shelf for, so I haven't bought the expansions, probably never will, but I'm perfectly happy to play with other people when I'm at their house or if they bring it over, you know, have people bring it over and pull out the expansions and cool, let's play it. The evolutions are neat. Some of the power-ups and things are neat.
Mm-hmm. There's also kind of a, this starts to get into like, when should you get an expansion?
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I have a tough time with personally is it kind of enters the FOMO territory, but for a different reason of if I like a game a lot and I feel like I am going to play it a lot over time, I want to make sure that like I have access to that content in case it doesn't get printed again.
Yep.
To me, that's what I worry about. I like if an expansion is available and it's a very reasonable price, I'll probably just pick it up anyway, because I at least know then I don't have to worry about it not being printed, especially sometimes base games are much easier to find than their expansion content because yep. just by the sheer law of numbers and the how much they print, they're not going to print the same amount of an expansion as they are the original game. They're just not. So I oftentimes will pick things up just for that reason alone. If I know that this is a game, if I played it enough, would definitely want more content for it.
Like that Life of the Amazonia thing where you got like the manatee. Yep. Oh, yeah. So cute.
I already knew that like this game is adorable, and my dad already, my dad liked this game a lot, and he was trying to find that content and stuff, and it's like twice the price as what I got. Like, it's hard to find. And it was just, this is how Kickstarter and stuff gets you, but I kind of knew ahead of time looking at the game, it's not that much more, and now I get a whole bunch of extra content that I know I would be really mad at if I didn't have it when it came out. So,
but we also know that that's how you tend to do things on Kickstarter, like with the Unsettled, buying the entire planetary system of Unsettled.
And luckily, it's mostly worked out for me, right? Yeah. I try to be pretty choosy about when I do the all-in pledge, but both of those are really good examples of where it's worked out really well. Like, I'm really happy I got all the planets because it gives so much variety to that game. And it just, it's one of those things, and this does get to that topic as well, in terms of, should you get expansion content right away, like when you buy a new game? And this might start to, you'll see how this all kind of comes together. So the reason why you might argue that is, if you have kind of the base content and then you only play with the base content for quite a bit of time, and then you add the extra stuff, you might just get worn out really quickly with the base stuff, and then, you know, the extra new stuff kind of also wears out a little bit more quickly because you're so used to the original stuff. Whereas if you kind of play with everything all at once from the beginning, it kind of makes it feel like there's a lot more just stuff in general, and you don't, it doesn't feel like as samey over and over again because it was a much, much larger pool of stuff to begin with, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, Morgan and I kind of did that with Too Many Bones because the base game when we started playing was just unavailable. Even the second expansion was just unavailable, but the expansions are all standalone games. So we started with the third expansion that included a bunch of extra mechanics and stuff that like, so when we went back and played the base game, you can still have that third expansion, second expansion, because now we have all the expansions, content in mixed in together. So you've got a really good complex game, even though it's on the base platform, and it's just a little bit different. So
That tends to be a lot of the expansions that I really do like is when, like, you know, again, like with Unsettled or like something like Scythe, where you're adding in just some different factions, where by adding the expansion, you're not adding like, you know, a doubling of this other rule set, but you're adding different, you know, different player options or different player, you know, scenarios so that it's, you know, it's another planet in Scythe that you're exploring. It's a different faction that you're playing with in Scythe. It's different characters you're playing with in Too Many Bones. Like, those kind of things don't end up making the game necessarily massively harder to play. They just allow more choices to work with.
Yeah, they expand your options.
I think that's one of the things that I really like about Spirit Island's expansions, that, you know, if you're an entry-level player and you're starting to play, you know, it doesn't make it more complicated necessarily for you for playing with the expansions in there, because you can still just play a simple-to-play Spirit, and your rule set that you're playing with is simple. Mm-hmm. The fact that I'm playing with a new, very complex, very strange, bizarre Spirit doesn't make it harder for the other players. It just gives me a different experience to be able to play with and try. So I think the kinds of expansions I tend to like with that, the kinds of ones that are good to get, like you said, fairly early into having a game, are ones that kind of expand that out a little. So yeah, if you're talking like a Kickstarter or something that might be hard to get a hold of, maybe you need to get right away, I tend to prefer with those kind of things to maybe buy the base game, play it a time or two, realize, okay, I really enjoy this, I'd really like to have the additional options that these other expansions would add, and then I'll go buy some expansions to add to my box. But I don't necessarily need to go buy the whole stack up front if I haven't played the game. I'm not sure if it's going to be any good before I know if it actually captures my imagination and captures my enjoyment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is also why I honestly, in general, don't kickstart mini games, period, because it's way too easy to get wrapped up in the idea of wanting to get all the content for a game. Now, on the flip side of that, I think part of the problem is in the Kickstarter model, it's also not entirely uncommon for them to basically feel like they've stripped features of the base game, and you feel like to really get the full game, you have to pay, like, you know, basically get the maxed out version because it feels like things are legitimately missing. It's a hard balance to strike, but in some ways, some people felt that way about, you know, the Heroes game that I just got, where, you know, the original video game has like 9 different factions that you can play, and the base game only comes with 3.
Kind of seems weird to me that a game would come out and at the same time have expansion content. That seems off for some reason.
I kind of agree with you. I think it's meant to be kind of a price thing in terms of, you know, for example, the Heroes game is very expensive if you buy all the content. So this is your way of like easing you in and like, oh, here's at least a taste of this. And then if you want more, you can spend the money to do it. But it does kind of feel off-putting. Like Heroes is one of the more egregious examples because it has a video game version that has all these factions in them. And then you only get, you know, a third of them in the actual original game. And so it already feels kind of incomplete from that regard. And it's like, well, of course I'm going to buy then the larger box that has, you know, way more of them. It's kind of weird in that respect, but.
And I do think that has been a criticism that a lot of game reviewers and a lot of the gaming community has had, Sarah, about exactly that kind of thing. Like if you're playing out the game and you already have an expansion that's available, did you really just only try to sell us half the game and, you know, you're really just selling a more expensive game and we need both parts to enjoy this? Like, did you actually test it and find it was fun and complete and whole in the base version? Or is that really just a way to kind of, you know, force us eventually to be buying both parts of the game?
Yeah, it seems like just a different intent, like a making it cheaper, having a cheaper option. You can buy into the higher one if you want to, but you're going to get a better experience if it starts out having expansion content versus something that's more like, I don't know, maybe a billion people are playing Spirit Island and just coming up with weird expansion ideas and like they're spitballing off of that.
It just depends, because sometimes expansion content's like, here, we're going to add more cards to this deck. And so maybe overall it's, you know, just more variety rather than it actually affecting the substance of the game. Whereas like, to me, it depends on the structure of the game. Like for example, with Heroes, like having only 3 factions to pick from, because like you're fighting each other with these factions. And so to me, that is an active detriment to not have more factions.
Yeah.
It's not just like an augment to the game. It is like the core of the game. Mm-hmm. And so that's very different than like, oh, we're going to enrich this deck so more things show up. You know, like that's a different thing entirely in my mind. It kind of depends on the intent. How do you feel then, Sarah, for example? Let's say that this Kickstarter doesn't have expansion content immediately, but in the box, they've already built it to where if so happens they come out with an expansion, everything's going to fit nicely in the box.
I will never, ever begrudge someone pre-planning space in a box for expansion content. I feel like that is just the highest degree of beneficial that you can be toward your player. Like
considerate.
Yes. Yeah. Like that's amazing. Like Too Many Bones sells this thing called the Trove Chest that fits all the different. It is like, it's a giant box that's got slidey drawers and they sell like the components
that hold
the chips and everything. And people have like made 3D printed inserts for the Trove Chest itself. Like that kind of stuff where you're thinking about, I mean, that you actually have to pay a lot of money for the Trove Chest. So that's not exactly what you're talking about. But if they had thought about that.
I see what you're saying though. I see what you're saying. Like, well, I also think it's different as well, because that's much more of like, hey, if this does well, we would like to do more stuff. Like that, I'm actually more okay with. It feels more genuine when they do something like that.
That feels almost like I have an idea. I love it. I think it's going to be great. I'm going to put my heart and soul into this. I think I could expand it more if other people like get into it and like it as much, but I'm not going to put like all that effort into building a bigger world for this if it's going to be a dud and no one's going to want it.
Yeah. I agree.
Because, you know, are they really seeing that base game as being a real game that people are going to have fun with on its own? And I mean, it's possible you're doing that when you have the expansion available at the time of the release, but you definitely have to do that if you release a base game and say, hey, like in a year, we're thinking we might want to do an expansion. If your game can't stand on its own, you're no way are people going to be willing to wait a year and try it with the expansion. So at that point, you have to have been putting out a whole game. I know that there's been a lot of those kind of things with video games as well, where people like, you know, we'll see things where like, yeah, like what they put out was not really a whole game unless you pay for all these extras and you spend all this extra money and do this stuff. And
board games are very much going down the same avenue with Kickstarter stuff, unfortunately, which is also
capitalism, guys. It's capitalism.
yeah, for sure.
Everybody got to make that money.
That's true. Well, I mean, which, so yeah, I get it. But kind of on that note, let's talk about some of the things that are commonly in expansions. Like, what is being actually added in an expansion more often than not? So we've got, oftentimes, very commonly, one of the main things that a lot of expansions do is they'll actually add modular content, where they'll have, like, this expansion now has, like, five or six things. You can kind of add different pieces of it to kind of enhance the game in various ways. Or you could add all of it. Go crazy. But oftentimes it's adding little bits and pieces to kind of spice things up. And those kinds of things I really like because I think they probably take into consideration, like, they clearly like the original game and they just want to add a little zing to it. They're not looking to totally remake the game, which sometimes some expansions can dangerously do, and sometimes it's for the better. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But
if it's modular, the kind of things that you're saying, it's more important at that point that it doesn't completely, you know, rebalance the game, depending on which modules you may or may not be working with. And I know it's one of the things that people did not like about, like, the Prophecy of Kings expansion for Twilight Imperium is that it does say that it really the game is only actually balanced if you use all of the parts that we're adding here. If you're like, well, you know, I would like to just be able to add mechs and not, you know, not have all of these frontier tokens or whatever, you know, exploration stuff. Like, I would have liked to have been able to have these new factions and not this part of it. And they very much had said it with that. No, like, the only way that we've tested this and balanced this is if you add everything. And
I mean, but I think that's fair, though. Like, I mean, that's kind of, it ties your hands a lot more when you can't, like, Spirit Island is the same way. When they basically came out with new major and minor powers, they basically saw there was an imbalance in these decks and they needed to add, or they already knew that they were going to add more cards, but they weren't sure what was necessary yet. And they basically, like, future expansions made it to where it made things a little bit more balanced. And also they knew they were adding new spirits who would care about different combinations of things. So it all kind of went hand in hand, and it was like a harmonious thing of adding it all at once. And it also is another expansion that you can't just add what you want from it. You need everything as a complete package because they've considered balance based on that. Yeah. And then you run into games like Wingspan, where Wingspan's really weird, where they have multiple expansions, but it's not uncommon for people to only buy the ones that they want. Like, it's not one where it's kind of like the de facto standard that everybody just has every expansion for or whatever. Like, some people are like, I don't care about the European birds. I only want the Asia birds. And then it gets a little tricky because there's different mechanics in each one. And so you kind of have some issues there. But in Wingspan, it matters a little less only because the deck is so big anyway that it's pretty hard to really affect balance all that much more because you're already dealing with a giant deck of cards. So what's adding, you know, another 50 more or whatever?
Speaking of another game with a giant box that you can put all your expansions in. Yeah. I mean, so the type of things that I think of when I think of expansions, like the cheapest, corniest version of expansions are like seasonal holiday versions, like Monopoly, but your college town.
Are we going to call those expansions? Those are just scumbag cash grabs.
I mean,
it's, yeah, I mean, they're mostly just alternate versions of the game.
Looking at you, Patchwork.
I was just thinking of Patchwork specifically.
It's like fucking 20 versions of Patchwork. Jesus Christ.
There's Halloween. There's Valentine's Day.
Americana.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, they're not really, they don't really expand.
No, they're not adding rules. Mechanics.
They're just new.
They're skins.
You know, reskins of the game. There are some Monopoly games, I think, and, you know, they might have some, you know, minor rule changes and things here and there.
I think
there are. So those, I mean, but I, even with that, it's more, it's a separate edition, a separate release of the game. Like, they're not meant to be, I think, for me, when I think of it as an expansion, they'd be intended to be played with the original
game. Yeah, you buy the game, and then it's an add-on to that game. Yeah. But that's a good call out, though, Sarah, for sure. We would not categorize, or at least two of the three of us, at minimum, would not categorize those as expansions.
Okay, so
I thought you were going to say we wouldn't categorize those as games.
Okay, so
no, Monopoly's a game. I will allow Monopoly to be considered a game.
I'll throw in this as my, like, gray area between those and what you guys are talking about as expansions, and that's Final Girl. Because Final Girl is basically all just a series of expansions. Like, there are seasons, but the seasons are made up of separate games. You just have to have the core box, and you can play any individual film.
So you do need the core box first, or you can just play with just the seasons?
You have to have the core box that comes separate, and then you can add in any of the other, like, they call them films, I think.
Yeah, it's okay. It sounds almost in line with Wingspan, kind of. Or there's also, like, what's that, the living card game, the Arkham Horror card game, where you can basically, like, buy any of the packs of, you know, storyline, and you can, as far as I'm aware, you can just buy any one of those decks, and you can kind of just add it in whenever you want and play it.
Yeah, but it's just like, is it just a giant amorphous living game that continues indefinitely, or are these all separate expansions?
Yeah, because Unsettled's the same way, right? Like with the planets, because arguably you could buy each of those planets separately.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and the best part about Final Girl is you can mix and match it too. Like,
that's cool.
You can mix the monster or the killer from one thing to the location of the other. You can use the girl, the final girl, and their abilities in this game with this game over here. Like, completely mix and matchable.
They're still expansions. Yep. I think, you know, expansions probably, they cover a wide range of how they're treated, but it, in essence, is you own a base game, and then you buy stuff that can go on top of it.
But also, interestingly with this, you can't actually play the core box. You have to buy the core box and another thing.
I see. So no, that makes
actually,
sense.
It's not actually a full game. It's just a player for the films.
It is like Unsettled, because, like, the only difference is Unsettled comes with a base planet box.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, you can't play the game without a planet. Like, it's like a set of mechanics and rules, and then you need to plug a little planet into it, and now you have a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'd say if each of the films included the base components need to play independently, I'd say it's just a series of games. But since you need a base set of components and a base box, I would lean toward it being an expansion. But you can actually play the base game on its own, so I don't know if it's actually an expansion with it. It might just be...
Now, they do sell a bundle.
It might just be a complete game and it doesn't count.
They do sell a bundle with, like, the least... Like, so every expansion or every film has different rules. They all follow the same base rules, but they'll add something like...
Yeah, sure.
That's in a hospital setting, you find and pick up pills, that kind of thing. But, like, there is one base game that you can buy with the core box if you buy it as, like, a set that is generic, like the most basic rules. So arguably that is the core game. And yeah, then everything else is really an expansion. Fascinating.
Yeah, now that I think about it, yeah, we might have hit on like a niche set of like, for lack of a better term, expansions, but I feel like they deserve their own category, and maybe they're like a subset of expansions.
That's why it's so hard to describe Final Girl.
I get it. And honestly, I wouldn't understand it as much if I also didn't own Unsettled, because like now I get it. Mm-hmm. Like by itself, the game doesn't work without basically some other
plug-in thing to plug into it.
Yeah. Which is kind of a detriment to the game a little bit, because like when you're at the board game store and you're kind of hovering around that area, someone always comes over and are you familiar with Final Girl? Because I need to explain this to you, if not.
It is a detriment until you understand it, and then you're like, this is so cool.
And like, then you want to buy the whole season.
Right. Well, that I'm okay with, because it's like a way... I mean, Spirit Island operates in a similar way. It's just that, like, it's not as modular, I would say, as something like that. But it's like, you can just keep adding things, and it only just adds to it. Like, I would much rather something like that, to where, like, I don't need to learn a bunch of rules over and over again. It's like, I just get to add some new content, and I can just be off to the races and playing. And it's stuff I already know I like. There's no question mark about whether I'm going to like it or not.
Yeah.
You obviously will like some more or less than others, but that's like, in general, it would be pretty hard for you to just not outright dislike it. So,
yeah,
I think it's a cool approach. And I think more games, or to me, I enjoy games that the expansions just feel like natural extensions like that, where it's not just a bunch of, where the game is significantly changed. That's not to say there aren't some expansions where I do enjoy just the raw, just smattering of a bunch more mechanics, because it just adds more substance to the game. But I think I prefer the elegance of systems like Final Girl or Unsettled, where they have, obviously it's beneficial to them because they can just keep making content for the game,
and it's
easy money for them in a lot of ways, but like, it's a win-win situation in my mind, where I get more content, you have an easy way to create more content that makes sense and doesn't feel like a cash grab if it's done right. It just feels like I just get more of what I like all the time.
And the game developers for Unsettled are just going on an acid trip and writing stuff down and then making a planet out of it.
You know what? I'm totally fine with that. And also, I think it's even cooler that the community, they're like looking to the community to come up with cool planet ideas. Like, I think that's even cooler. It opens up the world, and they've designed it in such a way it's easy for them to generate more content. Like, I'm totally okay with that.
It's like fan fiction, but for board games.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's totally fine. But yeah, so we've got that. We've talked about the modular editions, which I guess I would quantify all of that under that umbrella. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, well, one of the things we mentioned here was additional player support. And that one in particular I tend to find to be problematic, and then I do find... Sars Katana's one that, you know, has a 5-6 player expansion, and playing with that makes the game take twice as long. It really drags. And I think that kind of thing ends up impacting, in my experience, most additional player expansions that I've seen, because it is, I think, very hard to extend the number of players you can have in a game without making what makes that game, you know, work and click just grind to a miserable place.
Absolutely,
I can think of very few games where I like the player additional player support that they will have in some of the expansions.
Yeah, like everybody, like for the most part, they probably picked the player count they did because it made sense originally, and they probably are just like, all right, fine, people want to play with more people, sure. Well, let's just throw it in. Like, sometimes it's a little tricky, because sometimes the extra mechanics can lend to it being more okay. Like, oftentimes they will not only, in an expansion, they will add mechanics, and then on top of that, that kind of enables, or they at least also add rules for more players, or add the ability to add more players. But oftentimes it's not as good, like, when they do that. It's even worse if they simply just add, like, extensions. For example, Settlers of Catan, they add, like, a 5 and 6 player thing that you have to buy separately just so you can play with more people. And it doesn't really enrich the game, and it probably is honestly to the game's detriment. So
then you've got the flip side of that, where an expansion might create a solo player mode, like a one-person game.
Those I like a lot, especially since oftentimes they're guided by very, very dedicated individuals who just love the game a lot, and they really spend a lot of time, like, crafting a solo mode, and, you know, then you can kind of get a sign-off on from the developer. There's a couple games that have actually later on gone to add, like, Automa, or however you say it, but basically, mm-hmm. like, automated, you know, fancy AI that, like, pilots a pseudo-human player, basically. And, or sometimes kind of bends the rules a little bit, and they can do things that players can't do in order to add an extra challenge where, you know, you obviously can't have a human making a decision. So,
yeah. Dune Imperium actually has that in their base game. They have a like, if you have less than their recommended player count, they have a specific house that you play that's just a stack of cards, and it tells you what that stack of cards does take up the space on the board. Because if you play it without enough people, there are too many spaces open on the board, and it makes it less exciting.
Yeah, more often these days also, usually games will come with the solo mode, but it's not uncommon for games to later on add one. It's just like, they're not going to slow the release of a game down but to craft a solo mode.
Unless
like, it's very clear that this game just screams solo play.
But if we have any game developers listening, you can never go wrong adding a solo mode for versatility.
I actually sometimes use the solo mode just to learn the game before I go and teach it to other players. Like, obviously, it's not a direct one-to-one sometimes, so you have to be careful from that angle, but it's not uncommon to be able to get 90% of the mechanics from playing in the solo mode.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I don't do board games in solo mode at all, so I really can't.
My name's Ken, and I have multiple groups of friends that play board games.
God, what a loser playing in solo mode.
I even bought Frostpunk with the idea that, oh yeah, this will be a game I can try doing it solo, and I instead did it with two friends the first time I played it, and it was interesting. But yeah, definitely a game that absolutely can be done in a solo mode version, and I've had it for a while now and still haven't even tried to do it solo.
But look, I'm secure in my introversion. I will own playing solo games.
I don't like crave it as much as I thought I would after having several solo games, but when I do want to play them, I'm really glad I have them.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, so additional player support, solo modes, modular. Have we talked about advanced mechanics? I feel like we have.
It's kind of just, we've talked about it in the Nebula sense that, yeah, usually when you're getting an expansion, it's not uncommon for them to add a bunch of extra new mechanics to the game.
Crunchier.
Yep. Make it crunchier. Or just larger decision space. But or just more, sometimes just having more options just in general.
I would say that I do think expansions definitely have a tendency, though, toward trying to make the game more complex. They're often targeted at people who have played the base game a lot, do understand the base game very well, and want something extra. And so, you know, if it's a simple game that can make it complex, even more complex games, often expansions will throw lots of additional rules at you that you may or may not want.
Yeah, there's maybe a handful of games I can think of where they've actually simplified things that maybe were too complicated or, like, unnecessarily complicated. But that usually is with newer additions and not necessarily expansions. But I've I can think of like maybe like one or two times. I can't even remember specifically where, but like maybe they'll simplify things by like they release new mechanics and then also simplify like an older one or something like that.
Like, you know, with Spirit Island, it's fine throwing expansions for a brand new player because it doesn't really impact them. But most games, you typically are going to want to teach your new players with the base game instead of with the expansion, because the expansion is almost always going to be harder and more complex for a inexperienced player of the game to pick up and work with. And in most cases I can think of.
That's a really good point, Ken. Yeah. Like there are one thing that is often asked is, when I'm teaching new players, should I include the expansion? It's like a super common question for almost any game. And you're going to get a variety of opinions. And obviously it's going to depend on the game too. But oftentimes I err on the side of not doing an expansion unless I feel like it really only adds options rather than rules.
Yep.
Then I'm more willing to include all the content. If I'm dealing with people who typically play board games and they're not going to be overwhelmed by the idea of more options.
Yeah, I was going to say, as someone with like analysis paralysis and who has been taught many, many board games over time, definitely I would say tend toward not including expansions unless this person is just incredibly quick at picking things up and you know that they're not going to freak out if they have a giant stack of Spirit Island. I still have to sort the Spirit Island spirits into their categories of like difficulty so I can be like, all right, all of these are off the table because I get there are
Don't
too
worry,
many
Sarah,
choices.
You're not the only one. You are
too
definitely
many
not the
options.
Only one.
Too many choices.
But one example is Champions of Midgard. I will always include all the content there. Because for the most part, it's just adding more options of like where you can send your monsters. Obviously, there's you know, they add like a couple of other dice types, you know, that for like, you know, fighters. But overall, it's like, do you want to go to the mountains and now fight these guys? And they give some different bonuses. Like for the most part, like you're not adding a huge amount of mechanics, but it really just widens the world so much more. And I'm never going to not play with all the content in that game.
I was going to say I fully agree with you, but then I remembered that we did play the base game before we added the extra stuff, I think. So
I've only owned the full game. Like I bought like the maxed out edition and that's all I've ever owned. So you've probably played all of it.
I think we didn't have the mountain ones that first time.
Yeah, did you set it up with only the base stuff when you talked, Sarah?
You know what? It might be possible. Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible.
Including all the expansions. Mm-hmm. Now, anybody who learns it from Tim.
Well, and that might have been because I hadn't played it yet. But now that I know how to play it and I can teach it, I will probably, it's very unlikely that I will ever play that game without all the content now. Because I don't think it's like that much more. Scythe is another one I would probably always play with all the content. Because it's just adding more factions. And the airships don't really add a huge amount. You could even skip the airships if you really want to.
They're just a cool piece on the board.
Yeah, it's a cool. Yeah, they're seeing that airship, you're like, oh, fuck yeah. Like, it really, like, adds to the theme of the game. Which is maybe another thing to touch on with just expansion content in general is, does it add to the feel of the game? I think most of them probably do, but I think it depends. If the theme was already not very strong with that game to begin with, it probably doesn't matter. But in games like Scythe, for example, it absolutely does. In games like Champions of Midgard, it absolutely does. Like, just having all the different monster types immediately just... It totally adds to the game.
Yeah. So are there any times that you specifically would not want to buy or play with an expansion? Other than maybe teaching new people, because we've talked about that.
Time constraints. One problem with some games, expansions is they can really inflate the amount of time it takes to play that game. TI is actually an example of this where, adding the expansion really adds to the play length of the game. Just cause there's so much more you have to do on your turn with like revealing the events and, people have just more money in general, so they can have a lot more plastic, and that can lead to a lot of a lot more movement in the game in general. So yeah, like you, some expansions really add to the playtime. Just from the raw sense of having more decisions, you're going to add to the playtime. Now, sometimes they will add things to speed the game up to maybe compensate that. Like one example is Terraforming Mars actually added an expansion it was the very first expansion they released to where they gave you like these corporations or something like, I don't remember what the name of them actually are, but basically they start you off with more money and like some extra bonuses. So this way, like your engine gets up and running much faster. And that actually does speed up the game quite a bit. So sometimes you'll find ways, you know, to compensate for long games. But for the most part, most expansions will make the game longer. Almost always.
I would definitely say there have been expansions I've played, especially ones that have modular elements where, you know, at least some of the modules I just don't like. I have felt games where it will break, break my preferred gameplay style or gameplay approach to the game in ways that like I don't really enjoy this game as much with this expansion as I did without it. So I definitely wouldn't assume that that an expansion necessarily makes the game better. I've played a fair number where I just don't enjoy it. And other people might like it; they might like it better.
To your point, not every expansion is good. There are bad expansions. Just period. Not even modular ones. Just literally the whole expansion is just bad.
Yep.
Dice Forge.
I gotta play it more before I'm willing to say that, but it certainly is reflective on, you know, I own it and I still really don't want to play it. But that kind of touches
you're not sure if it's bad because you haven't wanted to play it again because you didn't enjoy playing it the time you played it. So
it was very unbalanced the time we played it.
Which you can't judge balance on one playthrough, but it certainly didn't feel super balanced.
Yep. It's entirely possible you guys just, you know, made bad decisions given the new rebalancing of the expansion did, you know.
But also, absolutely.
This is a great example of when I maybe wouldn't want to buy an expansion, and that's when the base game is just so perfect on its own that I reject the idea of changing it in any way.
Right.
And maybe that's what's happening with Dice Forge. It's definitely what's happening with me in Return to Dark Tower. Because there's already an expansion for that adds like a trading guild and some other characters, and I'm like, no, this game is perfect. I don't need anything to change.
And that's the thing, like it could be that with the expansion, again with Dice Forge, maybe the problem you guys had is that with the expansion you have to play in a completely different way, and nobody wanted to change how they played it, or nobody knew at the time they needed to. So like Kim was saying, like maybe if he plays it two or three more times with the expansion, he'll learn that you just need to adjust how you play entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to say, yeah, I don't want to adjust how I play. I like how I normally play.
Yeah, that's
the game.
A valid
opinion. I don't want to add this additional thing I have to figure out and change my thing around. So, you know,
return or if you're Ken and you figured out the OP strategy and then this ruins the OP strategy. No, just kidding.
I made a face in this very visual media that we have here. So yeah.
Busted. But there are definitely reasons to not get them. And like we said, you've hit on this point again now, Sarah, of like some games are just they hit their niche in what they were doing really well. They like nailed it. And do you really want to go beyond that? Like, is there really, can you think of the game by itself and think about, I would love to have more of X or more of Y? Then maybe consider an expansion and maybe see, first of all, did they add that X or Y thing that you wanted?
Sushi Go is one where, you know, the base game I've bought a second copy of because I wore out my first copy. I did not get the party pack version because it does add more stuff. It adds more variety. I enjoyed the simplicity and joy of just the base game. I enjoy being able to put it in my pocket and take it to a board game night and play it between other events. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to sit there and I don't have to, you know, build the play sets. I don't want to have to figure out which, you know, modules I want to add and do. I just like the simplicity of what I'm doing with it. So like, there definitely is like, and that's one that's not even just because it would be harder to teach people. I just don't want to have to deal with it.
It's like in Skull, there's like one optional rule. Why are we even going to change it? Just play it. Ooh, the easiest way.
That's kind of a fun point. Like, I think I'm trying to remember who brought it up. There was a really good video that the Dice Tower released. I don't know why I'm blanking on the main guy's name, but it was a video about rule books, and he's just like, why do you have these variants that are basically like, you teach like the basic rules, and then there's like the optional variant, but it's actually the you know, preferred way to play or the intended way to play. Just teach the intended way to play. Right. It is kind of silly. It's like, if you guys have clearly designed the game to be played a certain way, then it's not really an optional variant now, is it? It's the main way to play the game. I kind of get it. I think their intention is to try to make the game easier to learn, but usually the variant is not even adding that much more.
Yeah.
So it's...
This is like when strange. Co-op games add a competitive version. Like, here's how to change it to make it actually, like, versus each other.
Or vice versa. Like, yeah. It's competitive and they've tried to make it cooperative.
That's weird. It defeats the whole purpose of the
game.
Sometimes
it works, but oftentimes it doesn't. And you can feel the resistance of it, like, just not really clicking.
Like, yeah, there's absolutely. A Dune Imperium expansion that... adds a combative, or no, adds teams. It adds teams. And like, I don't want to team up with people.
Yeah, no.
Don't quote me on that. It's been a while since I've looked at that.
No, fight to the fucking death. Let's go.
Because I know we're going to have listeners who are going to be mad, it's Tom Vassell is who you're talking about.
Oh, there we go. Jesus,
Tower,
time pass.
You
know, Tom Vassell. Yeah, he had a really, 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 I would go look for it. It came out maybe a month and a half ago. He talked about everything that's wrong with rule books to the point that I don't even think we can make a podcast about it anymore, because he nailed everything in like 12 minutes. It was a...
Oh, we have plenty of listeners who are never going to go watch that. We could totally make a podcast about it.
It's true.
We'll just make a podcast where we read the script from his YouTube.
Yeah. I mean, the video was incredible. Like, no joke.
We'd get canceled. We can't do it.
He nailed everything that is like, do not do for rule books. It was awesome.
Nice. So,
loved it.
You know what? This is the best part about not like researching extensively this show. No one can really say that we've plagiarized any part of this.
No, I mean, I've gotten some topic ideas, at least from just watching other board game content. But overall, like, I can't say that there's really anything, at least on purpose, that I've scraped from that other than like, oh, yeah, that topic sounds interesting. And I bet we could even like. Twisted a little bit more to maybe focus on, you know, this particular aspect or something like that, because that's what I care about, you know. So, but yeah, for the most part, I don't actually listen to, I'm a tangent, I guess, but I don't actually listen to a lot of other board game content. And usually it's only like here and there, just based on what the Dice Tower says about something or whatever. But it's, I don't really pay too much attention to it overall.
I say Dice Tower, Shove Sit Down. That's that's probably my main board game review content that I follow.
Yeah, I don't even watch reviews a lot. I really like I like more topical sort of things, which is why I enjoy doing the podcast, because I like dissecting things and not so much just reviews for games, which entirely subjective anyway. So
Who would you say you're guiding board game mentors and thought leaders, Sarah, in your life? Who really has inspired you to think more deeply about board games?
Okay, so there is, I forget, what is her name? I shouted her out a couple podcasts ago, but it's Solo Games. It's a YouTube channel that's about solo games. Also, I follow a lot of people on TikTok that do board game content, but then I deleted TikTok and all of the social media apps from my phone, so I don't follow them on TikTok anymore.
Oh, what happened? You did a social media purge, huh?
Yeah, and it's not really a purge if you don't talk about it, so this is me talking about it.
I see.
Yeah.
That's okay. I did that long ago. So
I mean, I think we talked about before on a podcast. That's really what inspired us to be able to have that Twilight Imperium game we had during lockdown. Because Tim rage quit Facebook. I was like, hey, the only reason I know you is because you own Twilight Imperium. Here's my phone number. Let's make a plan. And a couple months later, we were playing Twilight Imperium together. So if he had not rage quit Facebook, Sarah and I likely would not be friends today. So
thank you,
Facebook, for making Tim so mad at you that that we have this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
To be fair, I do still have Facebook and Instagram. I just don't have the apps on my phone. So if I want to look at it, I have to go to Safari and type in facebook.com or instagram.com to get to it, which has cut down my use.
Nobody would ever do that with TikTok, so that's just gone forever.
I really, can you do that with TikTok? I don't think you, I think you have to watch it on the app, right? Maybe not. I'm not gonna try. I don't want to know.
Yes.
I don't want to know.
Yeah, Sarah, you quit it. Why would you want to know? All right.
I have successfully purged that dopamine part of my brain. I don't need that back. Okay. All right. All right.
I have no idea if you can watch it through a browser or not.
Yeah. So to wrap up our, I think we're pretty much done on the expansion content. Maybe the last thing to see is there any particular expansions that really stand out to you as like, these are really great expansions or really bad expansions? I mean, for the most part, like, it's you're going to run into a bias here as well, which this is also maybe another good related segue. Keep in mind when you are looking at ratings for expansions, they're already inherently very biased because who's buying expansions? The people who already like the base game.
Yeah.
And it's already going to then tend to, you know, have people highly rate the expansion. So just, you know, a little catch 22 on that when it comes to looking at reviews for expansions.
I would say the Too Many Bones expansions, which again are standalone games, but specifically Unbreakable, which is the one that's like lava and introduces a different like whole series of baddies that are lava related, and it turns the floor into lava, which limits the map access. Mm-hmm. That expansion is just, it's just perfection. Like, the rules that it adds make the game more clear. I think because it's the third standalone game, the rule book is just better, in my opinion, because we've gone back and, like, read the rule books for the earlier ones, and it's like, wow, I'm really glad that they clarified this later on.
Yeah, it's crazy how much more refined rule books can get over time, for sure, especially if you look at just even, not, like, newer editions, but, like, they'll oftentimes, like, release a game, and then they'll have like later printings of it that have updated rules, and even those can be much better.
Yeah.
That like they didn't change the game at all. They just cleaned the rule book up.
Do game developers do errata for rule books?
That's kind of how they do it. Yeah. Like there might be like a living FAQ or living rules, but it's not uncommon for them with and, like, new printings
put out. Yeah. Additional, you know, like, you know, they definitely put out multiple errata things and, you know, changing and updating rules and tweaking things and modifying wording on some of the cards and things here and there. And that's frequently, you'll go search for, I'd say a lot of games, there'll be errata, or there'll be the designer out on, you know, Board Game Geek answering questions in the forums about what the rule is supposed to be, things like that. Those are always fun.
Yeah, so if you're ever unsure, like, Board Game Geek is probably one of the best places to check for, like, if you have questions about rules, you can, it'll usually point you in the right direction with, like, either to an FAQ, and oftentimes, to Ken's point, like, the designer is there answering questions because they know this is the de facto place that a lot of those conversations happen, so.
Unless, of course, you're banned from Board Game Geek.
Yeah, Tim.
I don't want to talk about it, but let's hear other games that I think that the expansion, I don't want to say essential, but I'm not sure I would ever play without it, is Feast for Odin. I will always play with the expansion in Feast for Odin. Yeah. They basically completely changed the boards out, so you don't even play with the same set of action boards. So they entirely replaced those. They add a few new things, but it's largely a pretty large rebalance, like overall, and it's definitely for the better. Trying to think of any others. I already mentioned.
I mentioned earlier that a lot of people are critical of or have different feelings about the Prophecy of Kings expansion for Twilight Imperium. I definitely do love it, and I think it does help a lot with rebalancing some of the factions that needed some rebalancing. I think, you know, the additional complexities that it adds keeps the game you know, just a little bit outside of my ability to keep track of everything going on at the table. And for me, that is what I like about Twilight Imperium, is the fact that I can't actually keep track of everything that's happening. And what, and after playing the base game, you know, three or four times, I was starting to get to where, like, yeah, I can keep track of a lot of what's going on. I know a lot of what other people's powers are. I know what their possibilities are. With Prophecy of Kings in there, there's enough extra stuff going on that I never actually know what's happening, and that's what I love about Twilight Imperium. So
what I really like about the POK expansion is that, like, if you don't want to deal with the extra complexity, like, just don't buy mechs. You know, just don't try to trade your commander, like, or your agent or whatever. Like,
It
definitely
just use
is,
it for yourself. Yeah.
It definitely is a detriment to you to not dive into that, but you can do it. And
you can
honestly
still totally win the game.
Yeah. Most people are not playing at such a competitive level that if you ignore your commander, it's going to screw you over.
Yeah.
Like,
you can still win the game. Totally.
So, I mean, if you, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but I never buy mechs. I just don't want to deal with it.
Oh, but they're so good.
I mean, if I get a card that, like, makes it easy to put them out, sure. But, like, I'm never going to purchase a mech over to infantry. Like, it's just... Can't you buy four infantry, actually?
Four infantry. Yeah. Mechs cost two. Yeah.
I'm always going to buy the four infantry. Like, there's just no reason for me not to.
Let's see. Terraforming Mars. Yeah, I'll probably always play with the expansions. Also, by the way, you... That one's a little different because a lot of people feel differently about different ones, but usually people will always at least want to play with, like, a certain set of them. But one thing you could also do is when you're, like, reviewing stuff, a lot of people will say, like, yeah, there's no way I would play this game without it. So you can kind of do your own research to see if people just feel like, you know, this is kind of the universally understood way to play. Like, I would honestly say, like, with Twilight Imperium, for example, most people will say that POK is kind of the understood standard at this point. Like, if they're talking about the game, they're talking about the POK version of the game. And the same way that in a lot of video games, most people, once an expansion is out, that is the de facto understood standard of that game, just outright. Yeah. And I would say for board games, that's mostly true, unless there's so many expansions and there is, like, disagreement about, like, how much they're liked, whereas POK almost is universally liked. Like, there's obviously some, you know, detractors of it, or just people who are like, eh, it's fine. There's not many people who are just outright, no, it's bad.
I mean, let's be real, though. The people that are playing Twilight Imperium enough to own it and also be in the market for potentially doing expansions are going to be the people who are going to love that expansion.
Oh, of course. Which is, exactly. Absolutely.
Going back to the review that Shepard did, they're like, yeah, people who know that they want this expansion know that they want it and are going to have already bought it and they don't really care what a review says. And, you know who you are and you're having fun with it. So cool. Mm-hmm. For people who are not sure whether they need it, and that was what they wanted to talk about with their review. Mm-hmm. But yes, the people who want it have it and know they want it and know that they needed it. And. Mm-hmm. That includes me.
Can I throw out an honorable mention for an expansion that I would absolutely immediately buy when I buy this game, which I'm going to?
Okay.
Of course.
Okay. I really want to buy Ark Nova, but I also explicitly want to buy the Aquarium expansion.
I forgot that they were coming out with that. I might have to get that.
Yes. I want it so badly.
Well, Sarah, if you want, you can also, you know... I'm sure I could find room on my shelf for an Aquarium expansion.
Didn't we hear at some point that you no longer had space for more games?
No. See,
no
I'm
more
sure.
Horizontal space. He still has vertical space.
See, if it's gonna fit in the original box, I'm good, baby. I'm good.
So, infinite expansions as long as you can figure out a way to cram them onto one box.
We figured out if you don't push the box lid all the way down, you get extra box space.
Yeah. See, I mean,
you don't close it
Alicia,
all the way.
Alicia already knows that, like, if we already own the game, like, I'm probably going to get the expansion to it unless I've actively read it's bad. Because at this
point. How could an Ark Nova Aquarium expansion be bad? I cannot.
Exactly.
Fathom.
And she loves that game. So that one's an easy one.
They, I believe they have it at Game Theory, so.
I'm going to have to take a look at that, actually.
Very cool.
All right. So we'll wrap up. Any game plans coming up? Any big game nights?
Yeah, like I mentioned, I have a new gaming group I'll be hanging out with tomorrow. So that's gonna be fun. And
I'm ready to play Heroes, man.
Yeah, with people. We definitely need to get that to a table.
I'm very excited. If you love minis, you're gonna love this game, man.
I do love a mini.
We're recording this right after the big rally board gaming convention playthrough, which
we all went to, definitely.
Yeah, no, definitely. In no way did we all have other things going on in our lives and not go at all.
Yeah,
I really wanted to go. If I wasn't like literally out of the country the week before, I would have been fine with it. But nah, it wasn't happening.
I very easily could have made plans to have gone. Instead, I did five other things. But
you probably would have gone if I would have gone, but I wasn't going. So.
To be honest, I can't remember what I did on Saturday, but it somehow outweighed playthrough. But I did want to go. I did.
I'm really trying to decide if I really would want to go to one of those or not. Like, I feel like I'm just, at this point, I'm not sure if I really see a lot of appeal in going to a giant convention. Like, it just seems chaotic to me, and like, yeah. I play board games to like relax, you know.
I could see finding a good group of like Blood on the Clock Tower kind of games going, other kinds of large scale, mm-hmm. Hard to table kinds of games, and being able to do things like that. I end up playing Star Wars Rebellion Sunday, and the guy I was playing with was like, "Oh yeah, do you want to go and play it at playthrough?" And I'm like, "Well, why would I want to go play a 2-player game that's going to last 4 hours at a convention?" Like, no, like that, yeah. There's no appeal to me in going and playing at that location. If I was going to do it, I'd be wanting to go play something that I can't get to a table otherwise. And that's probably going to be something either very big or very expensive. So mm-hmm. like if I was going to go like, play, Kingdom Death Monster. That might be something that I would go do because I'm not going to buy it. Although, again, maybe now I'll play it with somebody else that I've met. But something like that I could go see playing because it's expensive and it's hard to get a hold of. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of thing that I would go do it for. I don't feel like I'm really that interested in going and playing in tournaments. I don't feel like mm-hmm. I'm really that interested in going and playing, just with a couple friends in a corner.
I could see a tournament for like big things. A shorter game. I could see it like doing like a bracket style tournament. Could be kind of cool. Yeah. One thing I could think of is like the Heroes board game, for example, for people who have played the game and are fans mm-hmm. of the game, and maybe like they couldn't afford to pick the game up or whatever, or they didn't know that it was out. Yep. Like you could nerd out with those people, but
I'm sure that there are many reasons to go, but my introverted ass is scarred by professional conventions where like everybody's just trying to get a job and stuff. And like,
Obviously, the vibe is going to be different than that, but like, yeah. I still think that your introverted point's totally valid. I mean, I don't even consider myself a full introvert. I always jokingly say I'm an introverted extrovert, but like, the thought of going to a big conference just kind of exhausts me a little bit. Like, that's the main thing. It's a lot of interaction with people who, on average, like, I don't know. I feel like nerds can be kind of a mixed bag of people to interact with, and I can even understand that doubly so for a woman going to one of those. Like,
I did go to a knitting convention. That was pretty great.
I could see that being pretty sweet.
Yeah, it was the expo area where they were mm-hmm. having people sell stuff. Oh, it was incredible. Anyways, all right, so we're going to do like an Alabama exit here where it takes us forever to close out this episode because I have one more question.
Alabama exit.
You like stay by in the house and you talk for 10 more minutes and you stay by in the driveway and you talk for 10 more minutes.
I've never heard that term before, but that's really fucking good.
I mean, okay, so how long do we think it's going to take them to come out with the Helldivers board game?
For Morgan, it probably is already too long, I'm sure. But, dude, I'm loving me some Helldivers, and we all need to play. Have you played it yet, Sarah?
I have not. Morgan keeps trying to pitch it, and I'm like, no, it doesn't sound appealing to me, giant bugs running at you, but he says it's very fun.
No, it's incredible. It's such a great game. But right. you have you okay. The real question is, because you watched Starship Troopers recently, right?
Yes, very recently. Yeah.
How did you enjoy like the theme of that movie? Because if you did, this video game's just more of the same, and it was great.
So fantastic, like quotable out the ass. Like you could quote any part of that movie, and it would be funny.
What is that? The first time you've seen it?
Yes.
No way.
Yeah. Oh,
I'm so
that's
jealous.
So awesome.
I'm so
which
jealous.
Which was why we had to rent it. Which like normally I'm not a person that rents movies on like YouTube TV, but
you know what's funny is Alicia had never seen it either until I showed it to her. No, it was way before this.
Yeah, but, right.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, she had never seen it either until I showed it to her. So.
Oh, wow.
Just the best. Yeah. No, it was really
I'm surprised as well. Like, cause I like, maybe yeah, it's no, just, I don't know. It was like my dad when it was like first coming out. So this is like blast from the past, but this was when we had really first really gotten our dial up internet. And like, we had heard about this movie coming out. And we like downloaded the trailer, and it took 4 fucking ever to download it. And this is tiny little square, you know,
oh
watching this preview. And we were both so hyped for this movie because it looked amazing. I finally remember Starship Troopers just because it was just such a hype action movie. It was amazing.
All right. So I have a theory on why men know this movie. Know this movie, will always remember this movie. And it is, there is an entire like 10-minute scene where everyone is just naked in the showers.
It doesn't
like,
hurt.
Just having normal conversation and like boobs everywhere.
definitely not.
For some reason, that's not hurting my memory. Yeah, for sure.
Because like, it was amazing to me. Like, I'm like, how does everyone know about this movie, but every guy is like, yeah, my wife hadn't seen it, or my girlfriend hadn't seen it. That's why.
To be honest, though, like, I mostly didn't care about that. The rest of it is so awesome. Like, I just remember them, like, him jumping on the giant bug and blasting a hole in it, throwing a grenade in it. Like,
action,
everyone fucking remembers that.
Yeah, no, the action definitely is, I would have probably say Sarah is at least as much of a reason why it sticks in guys' memories.
It's got both.
Yeah. Like I've been, you know, familiar with, you know, controversy about the book and the author and like the amount that I know about Starship Troopers as a property is so huge. Conversations about, you know, the ideas of citizenship only coming from serving in the military, and you know whether that's meant to be taken seriously or so many conversations about so many things other than the boobs from that movie.
Wait, so one other thing, Morgan showed me this clip. It was like a TikTok or something, and this guy was playing Helldivers, and like a charger bug had like knocked him up, and he ended up on top of it, and then it started playing the Dune music, and he was like, Lisa Nagai! He's like riding the charger. It was amazing. Also, if you haven't seen the new Dune movie, do it.
Is it really good? I was wondering if it was like overhyped or not.
To everyone, see it in IMAX. Do yourself a favor. See it in IMAX. Okay. It is so good. It's 3 hours long, or like two hours and 45 minutes, but it goes by like so fast because it's like so much more action than the first one.
Yep.
They changed some stuff from the book if you like are a huge book person, but it actually like makes it the pacing better than the pacing in the book. So.
And if you're not a huge book person, what are you doing? Listen to us. Go, you know. No.
Do I need to go. All right.
That's my last bit.
Okay.
Sweet. Well, guys, thanks for listening as usual to another. Oh, how long are we at now?
Oh, I don't even know. An hour and a half, maybe.
Probably.
Oh my gosh, an hour and 38 minutes.
Beautiful.
What up?
We've been gone a while.
It might get edited to longer or shorter after I go through and do some stuff. So don't expect that this is necessarily where your contract is, listener. But
you know,
it's been a long recording session.
Maybe it's worth 2 commutes instead of 1.
That's right. See, we've been gone so long, we thought you deserved double the episode in 1.
Aww.
There we go.
We are
all right.
So sweet.
We will see you guys next time.
Bye,
guys. Bye.